Hey there, welcome to SaaS Inbound Podcast. I'm your host and Dana, Head of Growth at SaaS Group. So you're looking for buying wonderful SaaS businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with inspiring founders and experts to get an inside scoop on how they made their business success. And today with me is Leo, founder of SaaSTNUC, a recurring meetup and a conference and a bunch of other stuff. I mean, you're growing, you're kind of all over the place. So anyway, we'll get to it. Welcome.
Thank you, Anna, and thanks a lot for this opportunity to talk with you. SaaSTNUC, sure. Yes, is a lot of stuff, but in general, it's a conference with a bunch of side events and meetups all over the European plain.
Perfect. And I also have to say a former colleague of mine, so I've been with SaaS Group a little bit, and I remember distinctly, so good to tell this teeny tiny story, when you were hired, like, M&A team came to me and they were like, we found this amazing guy. Like, everyone loves him and he knows everyone. So he's like you, but a guy. I'm like, okay. That's wonderful.
That's a great compliment, honestly.
We're going to have great fun together. But yeah, it's awesome to have you here because, you know, community has been the word of the year in 2024. And really, it's been fascinating to see, you know, how different communities and conferences grow and how people really shift from, you know, kind of being all remote to going back and like exploring what's out there. And you're right in the middle of it. So first of all, you know, you're coming from SaaS. You were with ChartMogul at first, then you were with us kind of simultaneously with SaaSTNUC, and then you thought, okay, I'm going all in. Why? Yeah.
Because it's worth it. I think like all of the connections and basically real life gatherings in general kind of took a backseat during COVID. And now they kind of came back with a vengeance. And I feel like people, especially with the rise of AI and like automatization of everything, people kind of value face-to-face communication more. And I find it honestly very exciting to work on. My background, and even in high school, I organized concerts and I was always about events. And I think I found the perfect mix of two of my passions, which is technology and SaaS and events. So that's the all-in part.
How did you start even? Like you were with ChartMogul when you started.
Yes. So a couple of years back, I think in 2020, I actually started working for ChartMogul. Back then, basically, I was hired as an SDR. I had previous sales experience, also sold software before ChartMogul. But ChartMogul kind of opened the doors for me, especially these doors of SaaS. And I got the opportunity to travel all over the world, including SaaStr in San Mateo. And I kind of got inspired about like creating this community in my home country, which is Croatia, and also in the region of ex-Yugoslavia and Balkans, because I find that we have very interesting founders, we have very interesting businesses and pretty cool locations. And I can generally think we're pretty outgoing people, so people kind of like hang out with us. So I think that was a good combination. And started with meetups. At some point, it just grew. We did our first meetup. I have people from community join me in organizing these meetups. And we basically grew from Zagreb to Belgrade, and then to Ljubljana in Slovenia, Macedonia, so Skopje, Macedonia. And now, after a while, we basically decided to do a conference. And that was last year in Zagreb. We had 400 people, mostly founders and operators. And as it goes in this, let's say, Central and Eastern Europe, those are mostly like bootstrapping kind of companies and interesting technical-minded founders that we presented with, mostly like sales and growth topics, scaling topics. And I think that combination kind of went really well and people kind of appreciated it. So for me, it was a clue to go all in. Back then, I was working at SaaS Group and I was actually torn between these two, because SaaS Group and M&A in general and opportunity to meet a lot of these aspiring founders and founders that have experience was the reason I joined SaaS Group. But then SaaSTNUC as well, as it grew, it just was too much to handle both. And as you know, because you talk with founders all the time, it's something that kind of grows close to your heart and it's hard to let go. So I just wanted to go all in. And yeah, now this year we're preparing this 2025 conference. We moved the conference to the coast. So now we're blending a lot of different teams, SaaS businesses, scaling growth, and also like a work retreat type of venue or arrangement. And I think this combination could be pretty unique for us. And in general, when you look at this whole space of SaaS events, I feel like we have something unique to offer, and I kind of wanted to double down on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, our events at SaaS Group are certainly smaller, so I understand you. Like, it definitely grows on you to like go a little bit bigger and you know, ask a little more people to join. And I think you're absolutely right. Like, when it comes to kind of what to offer, I feel like when you have a bit of work and a bit of fun together, then it's the best mix, because otherwise, you know, it's all work anyway. So like, what's the point of just working at a different space? So, oh, now I have FOMO because I kind of joined you at the coast this year, but okay, send pictures.
Well, definitely. I mean, from the SaaS Group boat, actually. From,
right? Yes. You do have a boat.
You have a boat together with Paddle, and I think this boat tour will make everyone jealous who is not coming, but right. we'll save you a spot for next year. That's for sure. You need to come.
Yes, I will. Definitely. I promise. I'll do my best. But yeah, you were talking kind of reminiscent about the, you know, the start of SaaS Tech. Do you remember how many people turned out at the first event?
Yeah, it was in a bar. That was November 2021, it was in a bar in Zagreb, and there was like 12 people showing up, and there was no theme, no, you know, I mean, the only theme was like SaaS, and that's it. I just wanted to meet people from Zagreb that work in SaaS, and Charcoal actually sponsored that event. We spent, I think it was like 150 euro budget on alcohol. And that turned out to be the key to success. But no, I'm just kidding. But these people haven't actually met each other. And the community in Zagreb is not the, you know, the biggest one. Like, there is a much more bigger cities. And I was feeling like, okay, this is such a shame that people working in companies in the same industry don't even know each other. And from that, like, core group of 12 people, like, just more people showed up, because every time we did a meetup, people would bring other people along. So it just grew so organically. And at some point, someone recommended to me, like, hey, why don't we do like a meetup in an office? And I said, like, great, that seems like a free venue. And we actually, we kind of had this company called Determ in Zagreb that were first ones to host us. And we did like three topics, like a little bit of sessions. And it turned out to be a really, really cool model. And from there, like, other companies started offering it up. For me, the biggest hurdle of organizing this was actually the venues. And, you know, you need to basically, if you create 12 events a year, you need to do 12 times the sponsorships and everything. And this kind of turned out to be a very interesting combo, because these companies would host it for a very low price. They basically bought, you know, pizzas and drinks, and we got to planning of an event and, you know, the sessions. And it turned out to be a good marriage in general. And we grew from there and grew to other cities with the same principle.
Okay, so pizza is not only something that will help you with your company culture, but also your events.
No, absolutely. I mean, these events are 6 p.m. Like, you're coming from work, a little bit of junk food and beer, it inspires, yes, a lot of good conversations.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Like, you know, when we started doing this events with SaaS Group, we also thought like, okay, we need to maybe do something unique. We need to offer something that no one else is offering. And then we thought, you know what? We just want to offer something nice with a few drinks for people to chill, for people to have a good company. And that's kind of the, you know, the secret sauce, because yes, you can offer something unique, and maybe like along the way we will do like, now we have the fancier boat, right, than usual. But I think at the end of the day, it's really the crowd that you're bringing together. Yeah. And that's kind of like my question, right? Because like, yeah, you can do an event of, and you can offer something and random people will show up and random sponsors will sponsor. But we've used the word community a lot here, right? And building community is a bit of a different drill. So what makes Sastanak a community, and what is a community to you?
Okay, so I think like in general, when I think about communities, it's like a many-to-many kind of conversation. Communities, like, it's used in different, this term is used in different ways. And I actually wrote a blog post. I'm not sure if I published it yet or not, but I think like when you talk about communities, you have like businesses building their own communities, which are usually user groups, people who are using the software. So it's more of like a help desk kind of thing. Then you have like creators having their own communities. And I think it's an interesting proposition because like creator is the leader and they kind of dictate the tempo. And then you have communities like Sastanak and like, you know, Saster, Sastok, whatever. And these communities are usually many to many with like community custodians, like, for example, Sastanak gathering people at the same event. So these people sometimes know each other before, sometimes don't, but they get a forum, they get a room, you know, and that's where we're in a date where they can actually meet. And I think that's what it makes it successful. Like you're not pushing any kind of agenda from the top, but rather you're just facilitating these connections. And sometimes that means like curating events to certain groups, like having closed events, open events, and different types of topics, which kind of set the mood. And I think like for us, as I see Sastanak and I see like other communities that are successful, they are kind of custodians of already, you know, community is out there. We're just custodians and we have this opportunity to lead it or steer it in some way and facilitate the, you know, better and deeper connections.
Absolutely. All right. Because you said the word moderation, right? And I had the founders of Sasiest here. And what they told me is that, you know, one of the kind of the secrets to success of Sasiest and the secret of a working community for them is moderation. So they make sure they know who's coming. They make sure, you know, what the topic of the presentation is and even how it looks like. So they really kind of like rule with iron fist, right? So they want to make sure that it's the way they want it, right? That the community operates a certain way. Do you believe in that kind of moderation, or is Sasnak a little bit different? And it's like you said, you're just kind of facilitating this, but letting people run free.
It's kind of more lean. I would describe it as a more lean approach because the meetups themselves, they feature operators that we know of different companies, but those are not famous people. They're not professional speakers. They are people in the business, knowing the crux of their business and then sharing their stories. At the conference itself, we also dedicated a large portion of the agenda to founders themselves. This is something that is a risky proposition, to be honest, because founders can, you know, operate a huge business or very successful business, but, you know, suck on stage. And we kind of took that risk knowingly that it might turn out to be bad or, you know, not exactly what we expected, but it turned out to be great because people, I think other than professional speakers or operators that have a lot of experience in publishing content and delivering content, they want to hear real stories as well. And these real stories are messy. And I think life is messy. So you kind of get that on stage. Obviously, we didn't have fumbles or any that kind of thing. Actually, everyone delivered like they actually got proper speaking coaches. And I was very glad with that. But we got a little bit more authenticity from it. And I feel like for me, personally, that's something that I seek in content that I search online and also in person. And I think our audience recognize that as well. So I would say like rigid structures are fine. And I think like you need to be make sure that you deliver a really good product when people are paying for it. But on the other hand, I think there is a little bit of authenticity and randomness to it that you can add with like, you know, taking the your foot out of gas or, you know, not being so strict in moderation kind of helps in bringing something new to the foray.
Right. I think both approaches could work just fine and bring as much value. But it got me thinking about this kind of trend, or I don't know, people are just kind of, again, talking about it throughout the year, is the fact that during the conferences, yes, it's nice to have someone great on stage. It's great to have, you know, some speeches that you really wanted to deep dive into, but it's even more valuable to be talking to a person that you really like or somebody who has this real experience. So I think in a way you're kind of bringing both into it. So it's still relevant and true, something that is happening on stage. And it's something that you can later take to, I don't know, take off stage, right? And discuss with the same person or someone else.
Yeah, look, so I'm from Croatia, and I mean, in general, like, let's say something like Central and Eastern Europe. And when we go to conferences, like I've been to SASTOC in Dublin for 3 years and in SASTER in San Francisco, but there is this feeling of course, you want to hear from someone very successful, but there is this feeling of like, can I actually relate to this? Like, is this an experience that I could get in my part of the world? And I feel like in a lot of cases, it's not that attainable. Like, is you don't really have those kind of opportunities for funding, for scaling the company. It's a much different route, you know, scaling a company from a country like Croatia or Czech Republic or, you know, Poland, and as opposed to, you know, US or UK or even Scandinavia in that matter. And I think this is where we cannot really count on someone from US bringing the details to it. Of course, like a good blend of especially US operators that are really good. Like, for example, we had Poya from SASTER, who is a very well-known networker and a salesperson that was a keynote at our conference. Like a good blend of these kind of people and people that have done it from this region kind of helps actually inspire folks that are about to do it. So I think these two things can actually influence people more. And on the other hand, what you mentioned for, like, that's the content part. The other part, which I personally spend most time when I was at conferences because I was in a professional role working booths, you know, working basically meetings at the conference, there is a lot of these organizational details that either hinder your, you know, stay and basically hinder your experience at the conference or benefit it. And what I liked about in general, like, for example, at SASTER, there was a whole host of side events that you could pick from. And they were all situated like around in basically one strip in San Mateo. So you had very easy time actually navigating these side events. And the whole conference, because it used to be outdoor, I don't know if they're going to do outdoor again, was very inviting to other, you know, let's say experiences at the conference, as not only giving into account the talks, but also like doing stuff at sponsor booths in different shared areas, etc. So my thinking about Sasanak was, okay, like we're not, our aim is not to do like a, you know, Sasser type event, like that huge of an event. I don't think it's a viable thing. But what we can do is like a little bit of a boutique kind of event where people show up, they stay at one place, they have a host of different side events, which are actually interesting and something that you can't really experience today to day. So we're offering, you know, winery tours, boat tours, like different sightseeing, coastal stuff. So like coastal parties, beach parties, stuff like that, that is, you know, something that you normally associate with a vacation rather than a work trip. And I think that should prove as an interesting combination because people will be relaxed. And I think in a relaxed setting, you can get better networking. Kind of all of these things influence each other. And the second thing that is a different or differentiator in this sense is that people are staying in the venue where the conference is. I think we missed a huge opportunity in SaaS by always picking, or like organizers always picking huge conference venues that are outside or either in city centers or outside of cities where the hotels are kind of remotely, let's say, connected to it. So what I kind of don't like about traveling to conferences is thinking about, okay, how can I get a hotel as close as to the conference itself? Do I need to spend, you know, 100 euros on Ubers every day? Are side events on the other side of the city or they're close to the venue? And I kind of wanted to do something totally different and basically have it all in one place. Once you check in, you leave your bag, like you're set. And I think that kind of feeling can inspire people to connect more because you're not going to have this, all of this logistical thinking in your head, like, how do I get to the airport or how do I get to this, you know, side event? Is this a restaurant in this place or that place? So I think these things, and you know that best by booking restaurants all over Europe, it's just a nightmare to handle in some cities and kind of leaves you with a lot of time that you're spending on transport as opposed to networking. So that's kind of the key differences that we're going for, and I think people will like.
Right. So it's more like almost a retreat for founders, right? Where you just stay at this one place and you get a well-rounded experience of everything you can imagine, and with people who are going through what you're going through.
Exactly. I mean, in general, these, let's say, retreat or SaaS retreats is nothing new. I think what we managed to combine is a proper conference. So you still have like a bunch of stages, you have a bunch of content that you want to do, you have sponsors, you have networking opportunities, and it's larger. It's not like a 20 people retreat. We basically are planning a conference for 600 people. And then still you have all of these, you know, private stuff that you could do. If you want to just stroll around and go on the beach, great. But you're probably going to find friends to do it at the conference. And I think that's pretty cool.
That's amazing. All right. So to your previous point, you know, you were talking about this kind of cultural differences and how just bringing star SaaS founders from the US wouldn't really work in the Balkans. So it's, again, it's something that I asked Alex from SaaS Talk and the guys at Sassiest, you know, and the answers and, you know, even taking into account the fact that, you know, SaaS founders who really go to events, you often see the same faces at SaaS Talk and in Sassiest and the rest of them. But even with that, the answers were slightly different. So The question is, what do you hear people in Zagreb talking about? Like, what are the trends? What are the challenges? Like, is it also, you know, turn to profitability? Is it slowing down the sales? And you've been to SaaS Talk. So is there any difference in your opinion in topics that are being discussed?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge difference, I would say, because 2023 was basically this year where everyone kind of turned around and said, okay, like, we need to build proper businesses as opposed to businesses that are made for, you know, fundraising. And I think this slowdown kind of occurred in two spaces at the same time. One was SaaS businesses in US slowing down. The other was basically agencies not having a lot of work from these SaaS businesses. And that affected basically the whole region of Central and Eastern Europe. So everywhere from Balkans to Poland, there was a lot of these agencies, huge businesses that actually couldn't survive, or rather like they had to cut down their business because they lost a lot of big clients. And in that transition, and before that, even like before there was like already signs of this frothiness, these businesses started creating their products. So you have a bunch of SaaS businesses that spun out of agencies, and these businesses are, you know, funded by the agencies themselves. So they don't really exist in the same plane as VC funded businesses. And on the other hand, a lot of the people that work for agencies started their own businesses as well, and they have a bootstrapper mentality. So what happened is like, this whole trend from growth to profitability was never really a topic here because funding is not that widely available. I think like things changed a lot in recent years, but funding in general was not like the main topic. It was mostly about creating something, business, either like a solopreneurship type of thing or a solid business that can sell to foreigners, which because of the agency mindset, you kind of basically, first thing you do with SaaS as well, you're not building a SaaS for a Croatian business. You're building a SaaS for an American business. And then this change kind of inspired these people to actually look abroad as well and look at these, shinier examples. But at that point, 2024, like you didn't really have a lot of shiny examples abroad. There was like companies failing in SaaS space. And I think folks just turned around and said, okay, we're actually fine. We're growing profitably. Some businesses grew really, really big. So for example, we have this example of Productive in Zagreb, a business that now crossed 100 people and is a very interesting, profitable, also SaaS spun out of agency type of business. And they just continued growing, not caring about the slowdown. And then you have like these smaller guys that just turned out, and I have a couple of friends and examples like Treble, for example. I'm wearing their shirt. They actually raised big rounds and they are actually making a big push right now when like everyone else is kind of on the back foot. So it's an interesting time. And I think for our, let's say, wider ecosystem in Central and Eastern Europe, it's been kind of looking at abroad and saying like, okay, maybe it's our time now and maybe we can do something different. And I feel like it couldn't be a more perfect moment for Sastanak in that whole context. So I'm really, really pleased with that, not with the other people's, you know, miseries, but rather with us finally gaining our own ground. And I really like that.
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. Academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
That's cool. That's very interesting. You know, something that I noticed, because, you know, we're going to do our little dinner in Romania, in Bucharest, in, oh God, in like 2 weeks. Time flies. So one of the things, you know, I try to personally reach out to every founder that I want to see there. And it was interesting to see that you're actually like, you're right there as well. I think, I don't know, 70% of the companies that I reached out to, they did spin out from an agency. Yeah. And I even got one comment from a founder who said, oh, Anna, you know, you're not going to find enough founders to join the event because Romania is a service company, is a service country. And, you know, we have agencies. If you were doing an event for agencies, then, you know, it would sold out in 2 days, but you're doing it for SaaS, so it's not going to happen. It did. But anyway, I think the sentiment is there, and it's really interesting to see how different it is.
But I got the same comment when I started SaaSonic, and it's interesting because 3 years ago, people here didn't consider this, or rather companies didn't consider themselves as SaaS businesses, but rather product businesses. So you had like even wider category that you would pull in like all kinds of businesses, even hardware, like they were all product businesses. And then there is agencies, like they're 80%, we're 20%. And I think like there has been a really seismic shift in the whole industry because agencies are people who own agencies are smart people, and they started investing in products themselves because they see the end of the line. Like the agency model, honestly, is something that you either go deeper and more niche and you have something which is very unique offering, or like you have a really good brand, or you're basically competing on price. And like those who didn't want to compete on price or didn't want to zero down on a niche, they created products. I think this is a fantastic opportunity. What we miss right now, because you have these wide pools of engineers, software engineers that can work on any type of products, and they're used by a lot of businesses abroad as well. These agencies usually work for SaaS businesses abroad. These engineers need good growth talent to be paired with. And I think like sales and growth and marketing people. So this is where we kind of lack, or rather like we need to make up. Because when you look at a structure of an agency, you have like two salespeople on a 100 people business. In a SaaS business, and 100 people SaaS business needs 20 salespeople, or, you know, 15, whatever. So you have a very wide, like, let's say, gap that needs to be filled. And now if you talk to SaaS founders, I mean, especially here, Croatia and Serbia, I hear a lot of that in Poland as well, is that they miss like good account executives that can, you know, cover their parts of the business and, you know, actually sell. So this is where SaaSonic kind of found its niche, is actually educating and growing these people and putting them into like first place. Most of the conferences in this, let's say, part of the world are developer conferences. We kind of purposely said we're not going to have developer topics and like in-depth developer topics. We're going to focus on growth and scaling. And I think this is where if we do right, we can have products and businesses even larger than those invest in Europe.
Okay, perfect. That makes great sense, by the way. So yeah, what makes a good conference to you? Like what is supposed to happen at SaaSonic that you say, okay, that was a success?
So I think like what makes a good conference in general, what makes a good work trip is like getting back home and having all sorts of experiences, feelings and connections that you made. I think like all the best, like people tend to value keynotes and like sessions a lot, but in general, they spend most of their time outside networking. So this sessions part, they need to be great. Like you need to provide content that people, inspires people, because it sets the context of networking as well. But the connections is something that people value the most. And I think a lot of conferences miss the boat there, where like you don't create enough shared spaces, or you focus too much on networking, for example, like connecting, one-on-one meetings, stuff like that. While there is a lot of opportunities where you can use, for example, sponsors or, you know, people who are partnering up with you at the event to create these different experiences. So my expectation for Sastanak is for people to meet other people. Like if you come back home, you're not and don't have like four new numbers on your WhatsApp, I think we didn't do our job well. And to do that, we're going to create as much as these genuine offline type of opportunities for people to meet. And I think that kind of, for me, honestly, when I came back from, you know, from Paris, from B2B Rocks or from Dublin in SaaStalk, like these are people I kind of carry along with me. And now I have more friends to call when I'm in these cities and all over the world. So this is what actually matters.
Yeah, amazing. Absolutely support you here. And I also wanted to ask you if there are any, you know, activities that you curate after the conference to actually, you know, make sure that those communications and connections are live. So I don't know, like WhatsApp groups or whatever, like in any way, do you kind of carry that community to the next Sastanak?
Yeah, so because we do these meetups in different cities constantly, like these people kind of meet in their cities as well after the conference, and we kind of don't stop. I mean, honestly, at some point, I'm going to have to take a break from it, but we have 15 events until the main event in conference, so in 5 months. These are kind of the most, let's say, pressing, or rather the biggest opportunities for people to meet again. Other than that, I'm not a big fan of Slack groups in general or Slack communities. I've always found that I cannot disconnect from any Slack group I enter. Maybe like sometimes when it's paid, you have kind of a more incentive to be engaged, but just the DM kind of thing, or like it's not a proper forum. I kind of feel like sometimes back in the day when you use like PHBB forums and stuff like that, it was more asynchronous. So yeah, I would kind of check what's happening, you know, daily or in every morning. Now, when it's like constant, I feel like there is a lot of noise and I don't really participate in these groups. Although we do have like a WhatsApp group for salespeople, and there is like spunning up like different WhatsApp groups all over the place, but they kind of function at certain, you know, quantity of people, like 30 to 50 might be like the perfect ideal WhatsApp group, you know, for something. And people usually post when they have, you know, a request, or like they can help someone with their request, but it's not like a very, you know, engaging thing that you want to communicate with daily. So to be frank, like absolutely honest, I haven't yet figured out how to translate the good offline communication into online. I think it needs to be in a curated group. Like we work with this Polish community called Product Dots, and they have like a curated group and online sessions that are very good and product and very curated. I kind of feel this might be a good approach, but still it's like one to many communication. You have like one speaker, and then every time like you need to do a round table on Zoom, it kind of ends up very uncomfortable and failing. And I think we just haven't yet figured out how to do really good online networking. And although a lot of money in COVID was spent on exactly that problem, I don't think it's been solved. So to be like, to reiterate the point, I really think like offline is the way to go for us. We focus on that, and we try to create as many offline opportunities for people to meet and, you know, continue in the Sastanak spirit, let's say.
Yeah, that makes great sense. I mean, honestly, I also think like we were thinking like maybe we should translate those into WhatsApp groups, and like, you know, in Germany, WhatsApp groups work, and like a few founders that I know have those and are engaged there. But in France, they don't. In France, something else works. And, you know, if you go to any Asian country, founders in Asia, then it's Facebook. And you cannot kind of entertain every idea of a community. And it also don't feel like it's very easy to connect people from really different cultures and different communities as well. Because like you said, you know, in the Balkans, the challenges are quite different. Yeah, we're also on the way there. But yeah, okay. While, you know, the tickets are not yet sold out, right? So, shameless plug.
All of the organizers know, and it's a dirty secret that organizers won't tell you, tickets sell out like a month or 2 months before the event. That's where the bulk of the action happens. But those who buy first get the best discounts, of course. And in general, it helps you book your stay. You're not going to be, you're going to kind of settle. So I think when I book my own travel and conferences, I just do it at one day for the whole year. And it helps me save so much headache. So I definitely recommend everyone to do that as well.
That's a good hack. But my point is, you know, while it's not sold out, here's your chance to tell whoever's listening who you want to see there and maybe get a couple people from the audience to Sassenach.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I kind of touched on the pitch already, but it's a work kind of retreat, a SaaS conference work retreat in one place. It's in Šibenik. It's May 5th to 7th. It's 3 days. It's actually going to be a 2.5 day event. We're going to end the conference at noon on the third day. A lot of people are coming with cars, so they're going to drive home as well. To get there, you land in Split or in Zadar airports. It's an hour away from the hotel. You basically arrange a pickup, shuttle pickup or taxi with the hotel themselves. And basically, once you're there, you're set. We have winery visits, boat tours, a bunch of different Mediterranean type of activities. May should be a very nice time to visit. It's sunny, good weather, and also not too touristy. So I think it's the perfect time to visit Croatia. And yeah, from the content side, we feature a lot of founders. One thing that we're going to do, which is a little bit different or special, the conference is Chatham House sessions. So we're going to have a couple of sessions which are closed, which you can sign up to, and then the speaker approves you to actually come and join. So the reason to do that is to actually keep, let's say, some sessions more private and more personal. So you actually get like, the behind the story. And I think this could be very interesting for founders because founders are usually the speakers and they're going to most likely approve mostly founders to listen to this story. If anyone's interested in that, join us. If you need any help with, whatever, booking, arrangement, stays, getting to Croatia. Even what we did for some attendees last year was we helped them book travel after the conference as well, because people want to visit other places, or actually we recommended a bunch of places. So if you need help, just reach out to us. We're a friendly bunch and we like to visit different places in Croatia as well. So happy to give some recommendations.
Yeah, and it's a great country to visit. I mean, I was there too many years ago to say it out loud, but it was so beautiful. So yeah, totally recommend it. But okay, you know that there are two questions at the end of every podcast, right? So first one is your biggest win and your biggest failure or your biggest learning with Sassenach so far.
So yeah, biggest win was, I would say like it's kind of endurance type of thing, or rather having faith. I think I listened to Sassius, the guy's podcast as well, and they mentioned something similar. When you're organizing an event, and I think it goes in business in general, it's not specific to conferences, you have this sprint, you have this date, immovable object that you cannot really miss, and there is a lot of unknowns. And trust me, like when organizing an event, especially there is unknowns to the day of the event, which for me resulted in a lot of sleepless nights. But it kind of turned out to be, for a lot of things that I worried about, they weren't a problem. Some things I didn't even worry about, they were a problem. So like you cannot predict the future, but if you have like a pretty solid belief that you're going to make it and that, you know, the thing that you're doing is important enough and you want to succeed, they, you know, fate is kind of on your side. Even if you don't do it or rather don't get the full success, it's success in itself to actually take the risk. So, I mean, especially like as you guys know, working with SaaS founders, like the exit or whatever is the goal is sometimes like just a small part of the whole journey. The journey itself is rewarding in itself. So I think like my biggest win was actually getting to that point that we can organize the first conference. And now we have the opportunity to do the second one. The biggest fail, I don't know. Like, honestly, I think the biggest fail was not accounting the small details. Our Wi-Fi crashed on the first morning, first day of the conference, which is such a new, like a rookie mistake that I could have predicted already. And especially by having a lot of our attendees from Serbia, they're not part of the GSM network of EU. It was a disaster, honestly. And the way we kind of saved the situation was coming up to the stage. I said like, oh, we shut down the Wi-Fi on purpose, like just hang out. And we kind of went out, bought four Wi-Fi routers. Yeah, no. I joked about it. But we bought like four Wi-Fi routers and set up like a Wi-Fi network in span of like 2 hours. And that was like a pretty big avoidable failure that everyone could have predicted. But there were more, but I'm not going to tell about it because then it's going to be like outing myself. But no, there were definitely challenges in organizing events that you expect or not expect. But I kind of blame myself for this one, especially as a tech conference. It was like shooting ourselves in the foot. So I would say that is the one.
Yeah, it's always funny when, you know, at a tech conference, tech fails you and you're like, damn, okay. I was supposed to know that.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, events are totally unpredictable. So that's fine. I guess everyone understands that. But yeah, the last one is about a hack. And it can be, you know, it can be about growing a community. It can be about, you know, doing 15 events in what, 5 months. It could be about partnering with the right people and right sponsors. Anything that works for you and you're willing to share.
So when I worked at CharpMogul, my manager, Sarah Archer, with big shout out to her and her team. She's the person that was coaching me a lot in these years. And I actually learned a lot. Kind of went with this like giving back mentality, which is like basically you kind of give something first. And I think when you're building a community, like you need to position yourself in like doing something for someone else, not expecting anything in return. And I kind of felt always like what I'm doing is important. And even if I, you know, give a favor or do a favor to you and you never return it, I don't care. Like it's part of a, you know, grander scheme. So I think like a good hack is actually treating people, you know, with certain type of respect where you would just like, okay, I'll introduce you with someone. I'll do something for you, regardless of like you remember me down the line. And it just turns out great. And people who do that, like they're fabulous people and I really love working with them. And if you want to be kind of a person that like people really likes to work with, then I would advise like just do very, how do you say, not selfish. I don't know what's the opposite word, but rather like very, you know, open favors, which don't require any favors in return.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm still thinking about that word. It will come to me once we hit the stop button.
Yeah, me too. I think it's part of like thinking in two languages. I kind of have it in my mind, but it's not there.
It's not there yet. But yeah, it's a great one. Thank you for sharing. I feel like it's a very important point that you said. You have to be okay with the fact that people may not come back to you with a favor. And I think that's very, very crucial because when you're doing a favor, you have to wire yourself in a way that, okay, this is something that I can do and be fine with not having a favor in return. Because if you forget doing this exercise, then it can still like nag you a little bit down the way. But yeah, if you consciously accept the fact that, okay, this is something that I do without expectations, then it works magic.
I think pay it forward is like the catchphrase I've heard. I think it's a like kind of a US catchphrase, but I really like that notion of it. You're kind of doing an advance payment, but you're not really expecting anything in return. And I think that's the crucial part. So people should definitely do it more.
Yeah, I think it's important if you're working with people building a community. So thanks for sharing it. And thanks for the conversation. I mean, it's always fun to talk to you. Always fun to see you. It was a blast at B2B Rocks. You joined our dinner and we had great fun at the conference itself. So hopefully we will catch up sometime during this year. But so far, good luck with Sasanak. And let me know if you want to do it again sometime.
Thanks a lot, Anna, and thank you for inviting me. And I hope next year is going to be the year where you come back to Croatia.
Yes, it should be.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. Thank you, Leo, and take care.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders, and if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS, but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.